Good morning. It's good to see you on this gray and rainy day. Good to gather up our warmth here. The opening words this morning are from Gretchen Haley. That name may sound familiar to you. She is one of my colleagues out in Colorado. And she loves to write words for services, for worship, and just send them out to all of us. So we get to share voices and share our worship with folks in Colorado this morning, because I think these are the same words that she's using out there this morning. So we'll have a little harmony happening across the country. Life comes for us in a thousand different ways. Undoes plans and upends traditions. Knocks down the doors of our defense. In a moment, every expectation releases, like the in and out of breath. Life is urgent and also unbearably slow and does not take well to our fantasies of control. We gather here to practice surrendering to the waves of grace and grief. In song, in silence, in story, we come to remember the possibility of a larger call, that we might offer our gifts with a surprising generosity, that we might release ourselves from the needing to know, so that we might simply be present to this beauty, these partners, this hope that we make together. Come, let us worship together. Bruce Menon will light our chalice this morning. And before we say the words of our covenant together, I will just observe that as we light this one flame, this one oil lamp this morning as the symbol of our tradition, we are anticipating that tonight at sundown, people who observe Hanukkah will be lighting the first candle in their menorah, that celebration that is honoring a miracle in the darkness thousands of years ago, that honors that you just never know how long the light will last, when the light will come again, and when the story will begin again. To celebrate this flame, I invite you to speak the words of our covenant printed in the order of service. Love is the dark. Please join in singing hymn 326, Let All the Beauty We Have Known. Thank you. The reading this morning is really a story, a piece of this book that I think is in my, it's part of my new holy text. I know that many of you have read Braiding Sweetgrass. Am I just completely preaching to the choir? Have you all already read this fabulous book? the waving of hands. So this book has so many gifts in it, and I'll keep sharing them with you and the people who were just waving their hands about how much they love this book will probably start sharing gifts from this book with you as well. It's written by Robin Wall Kimmerer, who grew up in indigenous wisdom ways. She is of the Potawatomi people. And then when she was 18, she went to college to become a botanist. And then she learned to be a scientist in the Western scientific tradition. And those two things wrestled in her heart and mind for a while. And then she figured out a way to do those two things together. And she became really a teacher in the deepest, most spiritual sense. So I want to tell you one of the stories of her teaching her ethnobotany class. So she figured out if she really wanted to teach her college students about the plants and the earth and the relationships among the things, she wouldn't say things, of course, the beings of the planet, the plants and the animals and the humans, the web that we're all in, that she just needed the students to go with her out to the land, out to the mountains and the ponds and the marshes, and completely immerse themselves in it for 5 weeks. And so the story that she tells is of being out there with her students, and the first couple of days, everyone's a little nervous because they don't have any cell phone connection and they have to listen to things differently and be in the world a little differently, and that transition is difficult. Transitions from one way of being to another way of being are almost always uncomfortable. So she describes that being uncomfortable as they move from the world that we live in to living in the marshes. And then she talks about taking them out to harvest cattails. Now, most of us think of cattails as these sort of odd-looking things growing out in the wet parts of the world. But it turns out, of course, that they're completely edible. Not completely. Several parts of them are edible. And the parts that aren't edible are useful for making mats and making diapers if you need to get back to basics on things, which, of course, if you're really living with the land, you need that. You know, once the cattail goes from that brown thing to that puff of white, that stuff apparently is wonderful for all kinds of things. So she's out there with her college students, diving down into the muck to pull up the cattails, and they're just covered in mud, and they're discovering the wonderful things that cattails can do, which mostly we don't do in the world anymore. We don't have that relationship with cattails. We don't know the gifts that they gave generation after generation of people. And then the next thing she does after harvesting cattails with her students and saying this is one way you can begin to build some shelter for yourself is talk about how do you make a roof for your shelter, and you have to sew it on. And it turns out that the best way to sew a roof on your shelter in the woods is with white spruce roots. White spruce in particular. That root has a strength and a springiness that makes it particularly perfect for sewing things together, because it's it acts like string, but then it gets hard and stays put. So you can sew a roof on your wigwam you can sew your canoe together, and it holds. But you have to know how to find the roots in the ground. And she takes her students out into the forest and teaches them how to find the roots, how to learn where the network is, and then pull up one root all through the dirt. And she talks to them about, don't take more than you need. Don't take the first one. Don't take the last one. But I want to read to you the part where she describes what it's like when they first experience seeing those roots underground. She takes them out into the forest and talks a little bit about the ground. And then she takes actually a knife and cuts open the forest floor as if it's skin, and then peels it back, and then underneath you can see that there's a whole body alive under there. So she says she's lays open the soil like a careful dissection, and there is some astonishment among the students at the orderly beauty of the organs there, the harmony of how they rest against one another, form to function. Against the black humus, colors stand out like neon lights on a dark, wet street. Juicy school bus orange. Golden thread roots crisscross the ground. A web of creamy roots as thick as a pencil connects all the sarsaparillas. One student says right away, it looks like a map. With roads of different colors and sizes, it really does. There are interstates of heavy red roots whose origins I do not know, and we tug on one, and a few feet away, a blueberry bush jounces in reply. White tubers of Canada Mayflower are connected by translucent threads like county roads between villages. A mycelial fan of pale yellow spreads out from a clump of dark organic matter, like the small dead-end streets of a cul-de-sac. A great, dense metropolis of fibrous brown roots emanates from a young hemlock. The students all have their hands in now, tracing the lines, trying to match the root colors to the above-ground plants, reading the map of the world. And then they each find one of those white spruce roots and follow it for an hour or two, pulling it out of the soil, going under logs and around rocks, and knowing the earth as they follow that one white line through the dirt. And then she teaches them to seal it back up and pour the water from their water bottles on it to replace the earth, thank the earth, and then begin to create their part of the map of the world. We gather here for strength and wisdom, hoping to get it from each other, from the earth, from whatever great spirit you experience. And we learn that there is a listening to each other, to ourselves, that is essential to wisdom. And so there is this time always for listening in our service. Sometimes listening to ourselves, sometimes listening to each other, talk about the passages of life that are shaping who we are and how we understand life. Sometimes this is a moment for listening to the great wind and movement around us. If you have a story that you would like us to listen to, come stand here with me and speak into the mic so we can indeed listen to you.
Hi, my name is Karen Patnod. As you know, we're moving into Christmas and you can see all the beautiful wreaths, but my real joy is all the people that came on that rainy Monday night to help make some of those beautiful creative wreaths And again, on Wednesday night after the dinner church, we again had people, and we were serenaded by the choir, and it was just a wonderful time to be here. All right, and my other joy, my younger son just got engaged to be married after being with his girlfriend for 6.5 years.
Hi, I'm Nancy Fisk. I bring greetings from Paula Wall, for those of you who know her. She has just decided to move Ed into memory care, so she's having a really hard time, and her birthday happens to be Tuesday, so I thought it'd be kind of nice if suddenly she got all these birthday greetings, so to brighten her spirits.
We will share her address so that people can send her cards.
Okay. I'm Greg Prazer, and this speaks to part of our unison benediction, which is give thanks each day. And I want to give thanks to Karen Patnode for the great work that she did on these wreaths. She organized the whole crew. She bought all the materials. And she and Donna, who collected all the materials, worked together to make this happen. And not only did she do all this, but she also baked all the cookies and made the hot cocoa to serve when people buy the wreaths. So to honor Karen, everyone needs to buy a wreath today. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Jenny. I just wanted to briefly tell you what a wonderful experience dinner church was on Wednesday. And I'd encourage you all to try it. In the middle of the week, you have an opportunity to have a spiritual experience, but also to eat good food that Mary makes, soups, or other people bring in. And there's a large spiritual component to it. Mary has readings, we sing, we eat, we talk about a particular subject, and this Wednesday it was
on beauty, because that's what Kendra is famous for this month. So please come, it's a wonderful thing.
Sure. Good morning. Can everybody hear me?
No.
Good morning. I'm Laura Hillier.
My son Alex didn't want to come up with me, and he's probably hiding right there. But he's so excited and proud that they won their first basketball game.
Oh, yeah.
And he showed some fire and tenacity like I haven't seen before, and I was just so proud.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Speak into the button. I'm going to hold it for you if that's okay.
That's okay. Hello, everybody. My name's Adrienne Drummy, and I just want to thank those who have remembered me and my husband during this hard time. Past few weeks, he has Parkinson's and dementia, and he had to have a surgery, which went very well. But he had a little problem after the surgery, and we've worked it out, and he's home, and he's doing very well. And I just want you to know that if you're a part of this Fuse community, you are never alone. Thank you for all your thoughts.
Hi, I'm Heather Crowley, and a couple of joys this morning. One is that you're reading from Braiding Sweetgrass, which is one of my favorite books, and if you haven't read it, you really need to. And the second is that I just wanted to say that it was a joy to hang Lori Roberts' work this week. It's going to be in the sanctuary for the month of December, and I think it's just beautifying the sanctuary, and it fits very well with the theme of beauty for this month, which I wasn't aware of, so it's kind of a nice coincidence. And Lori's new to the congregation. She's been coming since the spring. She's sitting four pews back. She can maybe wave. And welcome her and her beautiful work.
I invite you to take a breath of peace, a breath that takes in all that we have heard and all that we know is unfolding around us, a breath of life. And we will keep breathing as we sing our song to let our young people and their leaders go out to Young Church with simple gifts. Get to see things sometimes here that you don't all get to see. Did you see the young person skipping? What is it about seeing someone skip that's just total joy? I invite you into a time of meditation, a time of being still, of being here, being just how you are. I have a few words to bring you into meditation, and the most important thing about this time is for you to be in your own being, however you are. What if the world is a blazing miracle right now? Even in the cold rain, even in the troubles and fears. What if the world is an improbable wonder and delight? Even in this moment of mundane tensions and crackling change. What if we could remember all morning, all day, that there might have been nothing and there is this? Coffee and strawberries, laughter and koala bears, a child skipping and the light in the trees in the morning, bicycles, ocean wave, salamander. There might have been just the emptiness of space, and there is all this wonder of wonders. Braiding sweetgrass is an amazing story because she manages to hold so much in one book. There's a way that you could describe it as a book that describes the story, tells the story of what happened to Native people in this country. The way that the people and their wisdom and their ways of being were, I was going to say destroyed, but they weren't destroyed. The way the culture that I come from, in fact, tried to destroy them, and then the way that that we didn't, and the way that those indigenous ways and those indigenous people are gathering their story and gathering their wisdom and gathering themselves and having a new life and beginning to share a really essential way of being in the world. So there's a way you could say that it's that story. And it is. It's built on that arc. And she is a woman who is absolutely in love with plants. She says that she has photosynthesis envy. And I'm kind of with her. I've always thought it was just astonishing that plants can make their own food, that they don't have to go out and eat, that they can generate, that they're self-generating like that. She has been so taken with that from, I think, about the time she might have been skipping out the door here until now, that when she writes about cattails and white spruce roots and wild strawberries and sweetgrass, she's this, the love and wonder just somehow gets past the words even and just soaks into the reader, that there's that much appreciation of the wonder of the plant life. So there's also that in the book. So if you need a little wonder and love for the earth in your world, she can just fill you right up. Because she really got her own roots in early and can hold on to that. And then it's also a story about how to share that, how to share the complexity of that, which is a challenge. If you have ever tried to teach anybody anything, whether you're actually a teacher or a parent or a friend or trying to convey something to another person so that they understand it, it's impressively difficult. And she also talks about that, how she learned that in herself and how she had to change what she did in order to embody and meet the world as it is now. One of the reasons that she's really interesting to me personally is that she has put together that indigenous, intuitive, ancient wisdom, the very poetic experience of the world, with science, with the objective method of scientific inquiry. And that is something that I have navigated in my own world, my own family, my own mind, my whole life. And to see someone bring those together in a harmonious conversation is a joy to me, to be able to have poetry and science sit down and have a cup of tea and be happy and not be sort of going back and forth a little bit at odds. And we live in a world where the tension between those conversations can sometimes be real tension, and sometimes it can be just a beautiful revelation, that conversation. She starts her story at the moment that it's not a beautiful conversation. I think I told you a little piece of this story earlier in the fall. So she grew up in the indigenous wisdom ways, and then she went to college, and she sat down. It was a little intake interview, I guess. And they said, so why do you want to go? Why do you want to be in botany? Plus, she was a woman, and there weren't a lot of women going into botany at the time, so she had a sort of double challenge here. And she said, well, because I want to know why goldenrod and asters are so beautiful together. And the person who was interviewing her said, that's not a scientific question. You need to go to art school. So she did what is often done, okay, I'll put that question, that way of being in the world, that kind of inquiry away, because it's not the right one. And she became a very skillful scientist in the straight-ahead Western scientific method way, and slowly over time discovered that she still wanted to know why are goldenrod and purple asters so beautiful together. And then in this book, and she does it lots of places, she describes why. Because there is actually an artistic reason that that particular yellow gold and that beautiful purple are on opposite sides of the color wheel, and they, when you look at them together, they just kind of make your brain just... So there's that thing happening. That's just a visual perception thing. Well, it turns out that the bees also see goldenrod and purple asters. Their eyes perceive the goldenrod and the purple asters differently than our eyes do, but it also makes their brains go zzz, because they see so much abundant food and life there. So the bees know that that is where it's at. That's the life right there. And so we see beauty there because there's so much life, because there's some tension between those two colors. They do kind of make your eyes vibrate a little bit. And in that tension is life. So she has this pretty scientific answer to the question of beauty in the world. So she just talks about those two flowers, and then she just really just keeps going about why is the world beautiful? Why does it look beautiful? Why does it feel beautiful in this life? And it's really a question about relationship. It's a question about the tensions and the harmony that we're always navigating. And I think it's really it's one of her driving questions. Why is it beautiful, this world that we live in? And she keeps answering it, but I think most of all what she does is figure out how to live in it. Even if there isn't a because reason, she just keeps living in that question. That's the Rilke line to the Letters to a Young Poet about live the questions themselves, because even if the answers were given to you, you couldn't live them. So you have to live the questions until someday, without noticing it, you live into the answer. It's often like that. You can't conceive of how a path will go, and then you're suddenly way down it, and the question that was so big at the beginning is just quietly changed. Well, it took her a while to integrate that young woman who came in with that big question of why is the world beautiful, and got told that wasn't scientific enough. It took a while for her to bring that question back and really integrate it with the scientific method so that they were really together. So this card says, I just want to read this book to you for the next 6 months. Because of what she does with integration, because of how she pulls together the parts of herself, the parts of her mind that seem like that weren't connected for her, that were pushed apart, and the ways that she found to pull them together. I think that's the work of being a whole human, a spiritual human in the world. everyone has their own parts of themselves that have been pushed apart. And to see someone who has done the work of pulling it together is a great guide for us being our own selves in our own beings. And then what comes through from her is how much she loves the world, how astonished she is to be here, what a gift she experiences daily on the earth, and how she has been able to bring other people in to that feeling. I struggle with the words because it's not knowledge in the way that we think of knowledge in our minds, really. It's a very visceral knowing of that love and beauty in the world. She's really clear that it comes from being deeply connected to, for her, it's the plants, and it's essentially the plants. We, at my house, Ronan, my five-year-old, came home with a book from the library called Food Chains, and it has a picture on the front of a little algae and a little fish and a big fish, and the thing that I love about the book is that it says everybody eats plants, even if you don't eat plants. We all live on the plants, even if you never touch one, which I think is a wonderful thing for a young child and for anyone to understand that green life that Kimmerer loves so much is the foundation of all of it. It's a given for her that humans can be in really profound relationship with the green earth, and that the earth can be well, and that humans can be well. That ongoing relationship is possible. And for her, it's not just possible, it's just that's how it is. That we can all be well. And she says over and over again in the book, thriving is mutual, that we all thrive together. And that's, I think, what grows out of that love and appreciation, is that the green things of the world can thrive, and the humans can thrive, and all be in relationship. And in our world, we're so aware of the perils for the world, for the plants, for the animals, and for ourselves, that it's hard to hold on to that sense of all thriving is mutual, that we can all be well. And so I think to get to that sense of everything thriving, it's really useful to pick up her question about why is the world beautiful, and live into that beauty. Because she sees the depth of the beauty, and it lets her be with the world in a different way. And I think if we were able to live into that beauty, it would let us live with the world in a little different way. If we were able to walk around with that sense of, isn't it astonishingly beautiful, even today? Isn't it amazing how the rain falls? Isn't it amazing how certain leaves catch the rain, the way the water drips off of the pine needles? All those just tiny moments of beauty. To hold on to that, to walk through the world with that awareness that the world is beautiful. All the time. We tend to drive by it, I think, and say, oh, look, it's beautiful. But to be in it. In the story about the cattails, the students are in the muck. They're a little grossed out at first, but then they're in it enough that they're in the beauty again. And that, I think, is the thing. When we can settle into that visceral experience of beauty, we can do something for our world that we can't do if we're not all the way in the beauty. So what if part of saving the world is thinking that it is astonishingly beautiful all the time? What if walking around just totally overwhelmed by the beautifulness, just full of appreciation and gratitude, was part of how we save this beauty? And what if we remembered that we're part of it, that we are the beauty too? I think that can be a harder one. It is for me anyway, to remember that I'm part of the beauty and that it's amazing all the time. And that's what she teaches and embodies in the world, to keep acting out of, it is so beautiful here. And it is so fantastic that we are surrounded by these pictures taken by someone who's part of our congregation now. These pictures were taken partially because of difficult moments in the photographer's life. And that what she did was go out and immerse herself in the beauty of the world. Be all the way in it. Be beautiful. And then see how it shifted what she did in the world. So this December time, when the world is a little too much with us, I hope that you can find a time, make a time, to go out and be fully in the beauty of the world. I want to read you just one more, a couple more sentences about what Robin Kimmerer says about watching her students after they have sat down in that beautiful earth. My students are always different after a root gathering. There is something tender in them and open, as if they are emerging from the embrace of arms that they did not know were there. Through them, I get to remember what it is to open to the world as a gift, to be flooded with the knowledge that the earth will take care of you. Everything you need is right here. So find yourself a patch of earth this week. Maybe not today, but there's sunshine coming this week. If you can, if your body will let you, get right down on the earth. If you can lie down on the earth, that's really the best. And it will be uncomfortable at first, but getting some cheering for that. It's a little uncomfortable maybe at first, but just settle in and feel that earth. And if your body doesn't want to do that anymore, whatever you can do to get yourself in physical contact with the earth, your skin if you can. I know this isn't the best season to embark on this immersion project, but in a way it is. It awakens our senses to put our hands on cold earth. And just breathe it in. Just be in that beauty and remember that you are that beauty too, and that being part of the beauty will change how we are with our world.
we take up an offering each week, and the offering is a gift. It is a gift given in gratitude, a gift given as thanks for the past. But an offering is also a way of acknowledging beauty, of giving thanks for beauty, for the beauty of this community gathered here, for the beauty that this congregation shares. This holiday season, you see how we're passing along that energy and warmth out into the world very clearly. There are candles available up front in four places if you wish to light one silently during this time. The morning offering for all the beauty of this congregation will now be received. Out and seek that beauty as close to you as you can find it. Please join in our unison benediction, this benediction which has held this wisdom for us for many years. The words are printed in the order of service or maybe on your heart. Go in peace.
Speak truth.